This episode of the OrthoBullets podcast will go over the topic of clubfoot, or congenital talipes equinovarus, from the pediatrics section on orthobullets.com. Clubfoot is an idiopathic deformity of the foot of unclear etiology. As far as the epidemiology, clubfoot is the most common musculoskeletal birth defect. Again, clubfoot is the most common musculoskeletal birth defect. The overall incidence is 1 in 1,000, though some populations have an incidence of 1 out of 250. The highest prevalence is in Hawaiians and the Maoris. The male-female ratio is approximately 2 to 1. As far as the location, half of the cases of clubfoot are bilateral. Again, half of the cases of clubfoot are bilateral. And in 80%, clubfoot is an isolated deformity. Again, in 80% of cases, clubfoot is an isolated deformity. The pathophysiology of clubfoot involves muscle contractures that contribute to the characteristic deformity that includes CAVE, that stands for cavus, adductus of the forefoot, varus, and equinus. Cavus is secondary to tight intrinsics FHL and FDL. Adductus of the forefoot is secondary to a tight tibialis posterior. Varus is secondary to a tight tendo Achilles, tibialis posterior, or tibialis anterior. And finally, equinus is secondary to a tight tendo Achilles. So again, cavus is secondary to tight intrinsics FHL and FDL. Adductus of the forefoot is secondary to a tight tibialis posterior. Varus is secondary to a tight tendo Achilles, tibialis posterior, and tibialis anterior. And equinus is secondary to a tight tendo Achilles. A bony deformity consists of medial spin of the midfoot and forefoot relative to the hindfoot. The talar neck is medially and plantarly deviated. The calcaneus is in varus and rotated medially around the talus. And the navicular as well as the cuboid are displaced medially. With respect to genetics, a genetic component is strongly suggested in clubfoot. Unaffected parents with an affected child have a 2.5% to 6.5% chance of having another child with a clubfoot. Familial occurrence is 25%, and there has been a recent link to PITX1, which is a transcription factor critical for limb development. Finally, keep in mind that a common genetic pathway may exist with congenital vertical talus. Associated conditions with clubfoot include arthrogryposis, dystrophic dysplasia, myelodysplasia, tibial hemimelia, amniotic band syndrome or Streeter dysplasia, and keep in mind that upper extremity and hand anomalies are commonly seen in this population, Pierre-Robin syndrome, Opitz syndrome, Larsen syndrome, Prun-Belly syndrome, and finally an anterior tibial artery hypoplasia or absence is common, regardless of the etiology of clubfoot. Again, anterior tibial artery hypoplasia or absence is common, regardless of the etiology of clubfoot. Now let's go over some relevant anatomy. Again, muscle contractures contribute to the characteristic deformity that includes CAVE, where C is cavus, A is adductus of the forefoot, V is varus, and E is equinus. Again, because this is a heavily tested point, we'll go over it one more time. Cavus is secondary to tight intrinsics, FHL and FDL. Adductus of the forefoot is secondary to a tight tibialis posterior. Varus is secondary to a tight tendo Achilles, tibialis posterior, and tibialis anterior. And equinus is secondary to a tight tendo Achilles. The bony deformity, once again, consists of a medial spin of the midfoot and the forefoot relative to the hindfoot. The talar neck is medially and plantarly deviated. The calcaneus is in varus and rotated medially around the talus. And the navicular and cuboid are displaced medially. Moving on to the presentation of clubfoot, inspection on physical examination may reveal a small foot and a calf, a shortened tibia, medial and posterior foot skin creases, as well as foot deformities, specifically the hindfoot in equinus and varus, which is differentiated from more common positional foot deformities by the rigid equinus and resistance to passive correction. Other foot deformities that you may notice on inspection include that the midfoot will be in cavus and the forefoot will be in adductus. As far as imaging, radiographs are often not taken. However, recommended views, if taken, include a dorsiflexion lateral or a Turco view and an AP. The dorsiflexion lateral or the Turco view shows hindfoot parallelism between the talus and the calcaneus. For example, they are less convergent than in a typical foot. On the dorsiflexion lateral or Turco view, you will see a talocalcaneal angle of less than 25 degrees, and you may see a flat talar head in older children, but not in infants. On AP, you will notice that the talus first metatarsal angle is negative, where normal is between 0 to 20 degrees. The talus points lateral to the first metatarsal in this condition. The AP view may also show hindfoot parallelism. For example, the talus and calcaneus are less divergent than normal. As far as ultrasound, clubfoot is sometimes diagnosed in utero. In the first trimester, it's associated with anomalies, including non-musculoskeletal ones, which are very common in children diagnosed with clubfoot in the first trimester. In the second trimester, these are typically true club feet, but associated anomalies are less common. And in the third trimester, if clubfoot is first diagnosed in the third trimester, the false positive rate is higher due to the higher probability of intrauterine crowding. Treatment of clubfoot can be non-operative or operative. Non-operative management includes the Ponseti method of serial manipulation and casting, as well as the French method of daily physical therapy, manipulation, and splinting. As far as the Ponseti method of serial manipulation and casting, the Ponseti method is the gold standard in most of the world. As far as the indications, this is the standard of care for untreated club feet. And with respect to outcomes, the Ponseti method has a greater than 90% success rate in avoiding comprehensive surgical release. Children can be expected to walk, run, and be fully active in the absence of other comorbidities. The French method of daily physical therapy, manipulation, and splinting is rarely used in the United States. As far as the outcomes, good outcomes can be expected in skilled hands. Operative options for club feet include posteromedial soft tissue release and tendon lengthening, medial column lengthening or lateral column shortening osteotomy or cuboid decancellation, talectomy, multiplanar supramalleolar osteotomy, ring fixator application like a Taylor spatial frame and gradual correction, and finally triple arthrodesis. A posteromedial soft tissue release and tendon lengthening is indicated for resistant and or recurrent feet in young children which have failed Ponseti casting and bracing. This option is also indicated for rocker bottom feet that develop following serial casting which have failed non-surgical intervention. Posteromedial soft tissue release and tendon lengthening is also indicated for syndrome-associated club feet if casting fails. Keep in mind that when performed, it is often done at 9 to 10 months of age in non-syndromic feet, so walking is not delayed. As far as outcomes of posteromedial soft tissue release and tendon lengthening, this requires postoperative casting for optimal results. Long-term stiffness and pain are relatively common. And keep in mind that the extent of the soft tissue release correlates inversely with long-term function of the foot and the patient. Again, the extent of the soft tissue release correlates inversely with long-term function of the foot and the patient. Medial column lengthening or lateral column shortening osteotomy or cuboid decancellation is often combined with initial surgical clubfoot release in children more than 2 to 3 years old. This may be performed in 3 to 10-year-old children with recurrent deformity and a, quote, bean-shaped foot. A talectomy is indicated in severe, rigid, recurrent clubfoot in children with arthrogryposis, and the age of talectomy is typically 6 to 10 years old. Multiplanar supramalleolar osteotomy is rarely necessary and is considered a salvage procedure in older children with complex, rigid, multiplanar clubfoot deformities that have failed conventional operative management. It is also a salvage procedure in older children 8 to 10 years old with an insensate foot. Ring fixator application like a Taylor spatial frame and gradual correction is indicated for complex deformity resistant to standard methods of treatment. Keep in mind that recurrence of deformity is very high after frame removal. Triple arthrodesis is almost never indicated and is actually contraindicated in insensate feet due to the rigidity and resultant ulceration. Now let's go over the technique of the Ponseti method of serial manipulation and casting, as well as the French method of daily physical therapy, manipulation, and splinting in a bit more detail. So the goal of the Ponseti method of serial manipulation and casting is to rotate the foot laterally around a fixed talus. You can remember the order of correction with the cave mnemonic, where the C stands for cavus, the A stands for adductus, the V stands for varus, and the E stands for Aquinas. So the order of correction is 1 cavus, 2 adductus, 3 varus, and 4 Aquinas. Remember that a heel cord tenotomy is needed in at least 80 to 90% of children in most series. A foot abduction orthosis, or an FAO, is critical for long-term success. FAO noncompliance is the biggest risk factor for deformity recurrence. FAO use is approximately full-time for 3 months, and then at night, plus or minus naps, for 2 to 4 years. So, as far as the Ponseti method in a bit more detail, we'll discuss month 1 to 4, month 4 to 8, and then 2 to 4 years. In month 1 to 4, weekly serial casting with the knee in 90 degrees of flexion with the forefoot in supination, then forefoot abduction is carried out. First, you will correct the cavus with the forefoot supinated, not pronated, by aligning the less varus forefoot with the more varus hindfoot, and keep in mind that pronation would increase the cavus deformity. Second, you will correct adduction and heel varus by rotating the calcaneus and the forefoot around the talus, as the head of the talus acts as a fulcrum, and this will be done into forefoot abduction. So again, weekly serial casting with the knee in 90 degrees of flexion, with forefoot supination, then forefoot abduction. First, you will correct the cavus with the forefoot supinated, not pronated, by aligning the less varus forefoot with the more varus hindfoot, as pronation would increase the cavus deformity. Second, you will correct adduction and heel varus by rotating the calcaneus and forefoot around the talus into forefoot abduction. Tendo-Achilles lengthening at 8 weeks is required in greater than 80 to 90% of patients. Aquinas correction will last with tendo-Achilles tenotomy. You will perform when the foot is at least 60 degrees abducted, the heel is in valgus, and Aquinas persists. Cast in maximal dorsiflexion for 3 weeks after tenotomy. In months 4 to 8, a foot abduction orthosis, or an FAO, is used. This is used 23 hours a day for 3 months after correction. Nighttime/naptime use is only used until age 4 years old. The foot abduction orthosis will hold affected feet at least 60 degrees externally rotated and 30 degrees in the normal foot for unilateral cases. Feet are measured prior to tenotomy, so a foot abduction orthosis is available on the day of post-tenotomy cast removal. Finally, in the 2 to 4 year time frame, tibialis anterior tendon transfer is typically done at 2 to 5 years of age for 30 to 50% of patients. Again, tibialis anterior tendon transfer at 2 to 5 years of age, 30 to 50% will require this. Keep in mind that 30 to 50% will need tibialis anterior transfer with or without repeat tendo-Achilles lengthening or gastrocnemius recession for recurrent deformity. This is indicated if the patient demonstrates supination during gait. Moving on to the French method of daily physical therapy, manipulation, and splinting, this is divided into the correction phase and the maintenance phase. In the correction phase, daily corrective manipulations of the clubfoot are performed by an experienced physical therapist, and the correction is held with elastic taping and splints until the next day's session. You will begin with derotation of the calcaneopedal block and correction of forefoot adduction through massage of the Achilles tendon and gastrocnemius muscle. Next, medial soft tissues are stretched to allow the navicular to move away from the medial malleolus and its medial position on the head of the talus. Distraction of the forefoot and midfoot helps to loosen the tightened structures, and derotation of the foot facilitates reduction of the talus. Next, in the correction phase, family participation is integral to the success of this treatment program, as the family must be able to bring the infant to therapy during the week for 1 to 3 months. To maintain the gain achieved in passive range of motion, the toe extensors and peroneals are recruited by stimulating or tickling the lateral border of the foot and leg and the tops of the toes. Keep in mind that each session lasts approximately 30 minutes per foot, and manipulations are performed in a progressive, gentle pattern. Once the talonavicular joint has been reduced, attention is directed towards the correction of varus and Aquinas. With the valgus maneuver, the calcaneus gradually moves to a neutral and eventually valgus position. The ankle is externally rotated at the same time that the calcaneus is being mobilized into valgus. The knee should be kept at 90 degrees during these maneuvers. Finally, Aquinas is corrected with gradual dorsiflexion of the foot. Correction of Aquinas can be augmented with a percutaneous heel cord tenotomy. And finally, moving on to the maintenance phase of the French method, fewer visits to the therapist are needed in the maintenance phase as the parents assume the daily treatment exercises and taping. Periodic follow-up is needed to monitor the range of motion of the foot and the development of the infant and to fabricate new splints. Once the patient is walking, taping is discontinued and a resting ankle-foot orthosis is used during nighttime and naps until the age of 2 years. Throughout this treatment program, the patient visits the physician every 2 to 3 months for evaluation of the foot. Finally, let's talk about some complications, specifically complications with non-operative treatment and complications with surgical treatment. Complications with non-operative treatment include deformity relapse, dynamic supination, and rocker bottom deformity. With respect to deformity relapse, this can be broken down into relapse in a child less than 2 years old and relapse in a child greater than 2 years old. Relapse in a child less than 2 years old is usually the result of noncompliance with the foot abduction orthosis. This is associated with lower parental level of education, that is high school education or below, and you will treat these patients with repeat manipulation and casting. Relapse in a child greater than 2 years old is treated initially with casting. Consider a tibialis anterior tendon transfer in these patients that can be either split or a whole tendon transfer. And you can consider repeat Achilles tendon lengthening or gastrocnemius recession for recurrent Aquinas. Another complication with non-operative treatment can be dynamic supination. You will treat these patients with whole or split anterior tibial tendon transfer where the results are comparable, but a whole tendon transfer was preferred in a previous OITE question over split anterior tibial tendon transfer. Finally, a rocker bottom deformity is another potential complication with non-operative treatment, and this occurs when attempted correction of Aquinas contracture occurs before a fully corrected hindfoot varus deformity. Dorsiflexion occurs through the midfoot instead of the hindfoot. Moving on to complications with surgical treatment, this includes residual cavus, pes planus, undercorrection, in-toeing gait, osteonecrosis of the talus, and or a dorsal bunion. Residual cavus is the result of insufficient plantar release and or placement of the navicular in a dorsally subluxed position. Pes planus results from overcorrection, often from extensive subtalar capsular release. An in-toeing gait is commonly due to internal tibial torsion and or internal rotation of the talus within the ankle mortis. Osteonecrosis of the talus results from vascular insult to the talus, resulting in osteonecrosis and collapse. A dorsal bunion is caused by a dorsiflex first metatarsal. Specifically, there is a flexor hallucis brevis and abductor hallucis overpull secondary to weak plantar flexion, and there is also overactivity of the anterior tibialis. A dorsal bunion may be associated with inadvertent peroneus longus lengthening at the index procedure. You would treat a dorsal bunion with a tibialis anterior lengthening or transfer, FHL transfer to the plantar aspect of the first metatarsal head, and possible plantar flexion osteotomy of the first ray. That's all for this review about clubfoot or congenital talipes equinovarus. Hopefully that was helpful. Because this is a relatively lengthy topic, look out for a separate episode completely dedicated to questions about clubfoot, and hopefully this episode will have prepared you for that question review session. This is the OrthoBullets podcast, a daily audio review session by OrthoBullets, the free learning and collaboration community for orthopedic surgery education. Keep in mind that these podcasts are designed to go along with the topics on orthobullets.com, and in fact, you can listen to these episodes right on the OrthoBullets website while going through the topic. If you're enjoying the podcast so far, please consider leaving us a 5-star rating and writing us a review on Apple Podcasts. It will help us spread the word and increase our discoverability tremendously. Thanks so much, and we'll see you all tomorrow.